be part of the Wave Case.
Welcome back to the program, Evan Bray. Great to have you here. Although, if you are on the highway, please take care. I know I got a note from Greg saying, turn your lights on. So many people on the highway, and we know visibility is not great all throughout parts of the province. So we just got a text actually from Clark, says the Waka Highway around Waka is actually quite bad. Slushy, icy underneath, a couple cars in the ditch north and south of town. In some places, we're hearing light and blowing snow. So turn those lights on. Absolutely. I just, again, Greg shot us a note here and said about 70% of the cars that he's passing on the highway this morning don't have their lights on. Turn your lights on, especially when we've got this kind of challenging weather that we're dealing with. Okay, I mentioned we had to juggle our agenda a little bit this morning, so we're bringing in our guest from 10:30 in now. With everything going on with the federal budget, there's a few key areas that we wanted to key in on, and one of them is the spending that was earmarked for defense, $81.8 billion over the next 5 years. Now, you and I can bounce back and forth on whether this is a good investment or not. Many people, me included, feel like it is, but we've got some catching up to do. We've been neglecting defense spending for a period of time. No one knows this world as good as my next guest, who we have had on this program many times, General Rick Hillier, Canada's former chief of defense staff. Busy fella, but we're getting him just before some meetings in Ottawa today. General, thank you so much for taking our call.
Evans, my pleasure. Thank you.
So, obviously, with the federal budget out this week, we're looking at it from a variety of different angles. The defense spending that was listed, $81.8 billion, maybe just some initial thoughts, General.
Well, one thought that I would like to leave with anybody that listens to this and hears this is this. In today's time frame, in today's age, right around the Western world, defense is the coin of the realm. Without investing in defense and security, without building your armed forces to be a deterrent, to be able to survive in a fighting environment and then fight and win if needed, you cannot be a part of the club, if you will, of allies and friends. And so if you want to diversify more towards Europe, which our Prime Minister talks about doing, I support that. Then you've got to be investing in defense and security. If you want to have that relationship with the United States, which we will have to have forever, you've got to invest in defense and security. And no different from when we talk about building our relationship with Australia. So good news in the budget. Those are words, though, and commitments of money. But now you've got to turn that money into real action. And that's where we've been lacking this last decade or so, is getting words turned into deeds. And now I think this government has to do that. And I'm pragmatically optimistic they are going to do it. But the proof will be in their actions.
What does diversify more towards Europe mean in your mind, General?
Well, it actually means that we build more solidly our transatlantic alliance with the nations in Europe. We actually work actively with them to have those free trade agreements that are broad and comprehensive and that allow us to sell into the European market with the, from our defense industrial base that we have to build and rebuild, and that we also then look to more of their production and see what it can do for the Canadian Armed Forces, for Canada at large. But also, I think diversifying, we should think about along the lines of World War II, when we became an extension of the defense industrial base of Europe, so that when the Nazis overran continental Europe, all the production didn't stop. We had a huge base back here in Canada that produced ammunition, produced ships, produced airplanes, and as we all know, I think in from our history lessons, produced air crews to the number of like 130,000 for the British Commonwealth through the British Commonwealth Air Training Fund. I think we can do more of that, so that if defense establishments and defense industrial base companies get attacked in Europe, and that is not beyond the realm of speculation, that's for sure, then there is continued production in a place called Canada. And so I think we can do a lot of redundancy here in Canada also, and that's good for our economy, good for jobs, good for revenue coming into the nation, and good for us getting the equipment for the Armed Forces.
General Rick Hillier is our guest. Obviously, in the budget, it was fairly high-level talk. We heard the finance minister talk about meeting the 2% NATO commitment, modernizing NORAD, reinforcing Arctic defenses, and equipping the Canadian Armed Forces with infrastructure and technology, but not a lot of detail on how that money's going to be spent. I always enjoy listening to your view, General, of what the priorities are, where that money should be allocated, and kind of the process that should be rolled out. Big question, I know, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
On the process, look, I think the establishment of Defense Investment Agency with a minister that has responsibility for procurement is good, but now seeing how it will work is crucial. If we're just going to add another agency and another minister to the works that's there now, we'll just make it slower and more cumbersome. I hope that that is not correct. For the process also, I do believe that we need to bring in people from across Canada, from outside of government, because this is not the kind of thing that public servants can do. They have not done it. They don't have that experience. And bringing in Guzman, for example, to run BIA, bringing in Michael Chabia to be clerk of the Privy Council, I think we should do that 100-fold. And go back again to World War II when we had, you know, the dollar a year men or women come in and use their expertise from business to allow our nation to be part of the winning side and to help shape the victory in Europe and over Japan. And that's what we need to do again. So from the process, that's good. The last thing I'd say on process is the Prime Minister talked about putting a 2-year window on national projects. And I love that idea because it produces an urgency which is simply not there right now. And what I would recommend to him is put a 2-year window on major crown projects for defense and security. We're going to buy fighting vehicles. Let's make it a 2-year project and hold the public servants and hold the ministers accountable for getting that done. If we're going to buy tanks, let's put a 2-year window on it. Look, from the priorities of the Canadian Forces, this is what I believe. This is not necessarily what the Canadian Forces has got laid out. It might be. Yes to the Air Force. Yes, we need the F-35. There is no other fighter in the world that's comparable. Let's get over our anger at President Trump and the Trump administration, and let's make sure that we never have Canadian fighter pilots in a fair fight, that they're always going to win 100-0, and that's what the F-35 can deliver for us. Yes to the surveillance planes, the P-8, and yes, we need new helicopters. In the Navy, we need those surface combatants built. We need to build 6 of them, kind of reset the technology, build 6 more, then reset and build 6 more and keep going forever and then market them around the world. Yes to submarines. I would simply say we should be really considered the uncrewed submersibles since we're going to have this in service for the next 50 years. But here's the overriding thing I would say on what we need to get. Do not forget the Army. The Army is broken. It needs everything from long-range precision fires. So you're talking HIMARS, your long-range artillery rockets. You need self-propelled artillery that can shoot precision long ranges and survive on the battlefield. You need direct fire precision, so tanks. We need to go and buy about 250 of them right now. And we need fighting vehicles, about 2,000 of them from General Dynamics with the latest technology. We need drones in huge numbers, and we need counter-drone systems to protect our troops. Do not forget the Army, because the number one thing I think that the Army needs is more people. We need, you know, the number of people in the Army. You go into the Ottawa football stadium at Lansdowne Park there, and you put everybody in the regular force Army in that stadium, and you still got at least a third of it that's empty. And that's sad for a G7 nation. We need 20,000 more soldiers in the Army alone, and that would be an incredible increase in our capability for everything from sovereignty to Arctic sovereignty, to doing operations and helping deter with our allies and friends around the world. Do not forget the Army.
General Rick Hillier is our guest, former Canadian Chief of the Defense Staff. So on that note, General, what does recruiting look like? What does a recruiting strategy look like? This has to be, I would suggest, likely a mind reset for Canadian people. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. In fact, you are right. Let's put it in the positive. You're right. It's got to be a reset. But here's what I do think. Number one, the Canadian Forces has to realize this is their number one mission. And I believe the Chief of Defense Staff has got that and has articulated that. So you got to put your very, very, very top commanders, best people, and you make those sacrifices to put the very best people in that mission of finding the men and women to join the Canadian Forces. Number two, we got to be visible. And right now, they're not. I mean, when you see soldiers, aviators, or sailors out in our society, oftentimes they're prohibited from attending events in uniforms. I think that's been a very downside. I don't know why that occurs, but we need to change that. They've got to be visible. People have got to see their sons and daughters in uniform. Number three, we've got to go out there and sell the excitement of being a soldier, an aviator, or a sailor. I can't imagine what everybody in our country wouldn't want to go out and be a soldier and get an opportunity to take part in the greatest team that you're ever going to be a part of, to do missions that are so worthwhile, to work with four exciting missions around the world and across Canada, and to get a chance to do it with some of the new and evolving technology. And so we got to sell that excitement. Yes, come and see it. Grow, learn, experience, become a leader. You don't have to stay all of your life. Come in and stay for 3 years. And you know something? When people do that, most of them will want to stay for a long period of time because it is an exciting thing to do. I think we can reach Canadians, offer all kinds of incentives. And I don't mean money. Incentives for new immigrants to Canada to accelerate their citizenship as a Canadian. If you join the Canadian Armed Forces and spend a period of time, for example, more money into the reserves, and we could double and triple and quadruple the number of young men and women serving in the reserves if we have the money to give them enough pay to make that a part-time job for them and therefore a career, as opposed to going to work at McDonald's or somewhere else. A reset is needed, and I think that's coming.
You know, I wonder too, General Hillier, is this also, as we transition, you know, the investment in defense, more recruiting, does this also signal a bit of a paradigm shift for the Canadian Armed Forces? I mean, we're known for being peacekeepers. Are we moving a bit on that continuum?
Well, Evan, I'm going to criticize a little bit here and say, listen, we're known for being part of a winning alliance in World War One, and we are known for being an incredible part of a winning alliance that lifted the yoke of Nazism from around the shoulders of the world in World War II, and we did the same in Korea. And so, yes, we have done peacekeeping operations, but the way to change the world is to be ready for the entire spectrum of military operations, and that means you've got to prepare for the most difficult, and that is war fighting, that is combat, and that's exactly what you do in the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. And I think Canadians have started to understand that peacekeeping is less and less a factor around the world, because the reality is, and I've been on a lot of those missions, if you're going in to do, if you need soldiers in a peacekeeping mission, then in fact there is no peace there. And if you have a peacekeeping mission, then you actually don't need soldiers because peace is broken out. And so it's a bit of a catch-22 scenario from that perspective.
I'm just going to jump in. Just going to jump in for a second, General, because your phone is cracking up a little bit for us. I know you're in a building, I think, right now. So I'd like to get one more question in, if we could.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You are doing some important work on establishing a Canadian Independent Military Honours Review Board. You've got a petition going called Valour in the Presence of the Enemy. Can you talk about this and why this is important?
Evan, we had 25 young men win the Star of Military Valour in Afghanistan for their actions in combat against an enemy. We actually, in hindsight, maybe undershot a couple of those. That is the second highest award our nation can bestow upon somebody for their actions in the presence of the enemy. And we think that one, two, maybe even three are probably deserving of the Victoria Cross, our very highest award, which has never been awarded, the Canadian Victoria Cross, since we established it in 1993. And we figure there are one for sure, probably two or three, and the best way to look at that and assess whether or not it's true, and should they be reviewed and should it be reset, is to put in an independent review committee, review those Star of Military Valor winners, and assess whether or not one or more meets the criteria to be awarded the Victoria Cross. We believe there is. We believe that new information, richness of detail about what occurred during the actions, makes this very, very logical thing to do. And other countries have done it with great success. The United States of America has done it, and the Australians did it with a young sailor from 1942. We can do it, and there appears to be a great resistance in the bureaucracy of the government of Canada to do this. We've got a petition. I ask people to go online and maybe sign it for us. Valour in the Presence of the Enemy. It'll lead you to it.
Good stuff. General, always appreciate your time on the program.
Evan, my pleasure. Thank you.
That is General Rick Hillier, who is a former Canadian Chief of Defense Staff. And the website, by the way, is literally, as he said, valorinthepresenceoftheenemy.com. You can go there to find out more details and how you can support their work. We're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
On a crazy train. Yeah, I'm going off the rails on that crazy train.
Thanks again to General Rick Hillier for joining us, talking about and breaking down the defense spending that we saw in the budget to the tune of $81.1 billion. Sean and Weyburn, with regard to the defense spending, I have no confidence in the Liberals executing the procurement of military equipment. They've fumbled the F-35 purchase for 10 years. I mean, it's kind of what General Hillier talked about, is that we haven't had it right. And although he likes what he sees in the budget, I mean, he really did off the start talk about we need to see action. So if we can turn it around, you know, a 6 to 10 year procurement cycle, get it done inside of 2 years, a big step in the right direction. Cal and Oxbow, the military's definitely one of the things the federal government must fund. Why not stop all foreign aid and redirect it to the military? There was a removal of, I think, what was it, $2.7 billion in foreign aid out of the budget. So they did take a step in that direction. Maybe not enough for some people's liking, but we did see that reflected in the budget as well. Okay, we'll take our next break. When we come back, the mayor of Regina for his regular monthly visit, Chad Baczynski, joins us just after 10 here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.